living for themselves and their families, in a way forced by this economic displacement of the neoliberal trade agreements. And we saw that repeated with Central America Free Trade Agreement and increased migration from Central America. So if we want to get to the root causes of the neoliberal economic policies imposed through these so-called trade agreements and junk them, yes, that has to happen. Is what 25% tariffs on Mexico and Canada, unrelated to any of those economic goals, going to help the situation versus make it worse? No. Are tariffs part of the solution? Yes. Is this use of tariffs going to help? No. It could make things much worse.
Lori Wallach, thank you for being with us, director of the Rethink Trade Program at the American Economic Liberties Project and a board member of the Citizens Trade Campaign. Next up, the staff of USAID, that's the U.S. Agency for International Development, got an early morning email today to stay home. We'll look at Elon Musk's move to shut down the agency with a former USAID staffer, now president of Refugees International. Stay with us. Soul by Monk Higgins. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The future of USAID, that's the U.S. Agency for International Development, is uncertain. After Elon Musk said President Trump has agreed to shut it down. After a dramatic spat with the USAID senior officials and workers played out over the weekend, early this morning, Musk went on X, the social media platform he owns, and claimed the agency is, quote, beyond repair.
And USAID is a ball of worms. Mm-hmm. There is no apple. Mm-hmm. And when there is no apple, you've just got to basically get rid of the whole thing.
USAID's website has been down since Saturday. Workers have been instructed not to come to work at the agency's headquarters in Washington, D.C. That's closed today. Hundreds of workers have been reportedly locked out of USAID's computer systems overnight, with dozens more put on leave. This includes the two top USAID security officials who were placed on administrative leave on Saturday night after they blocked members of Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, from accessing USAID's classified systems, including personnel files and information about contracts, for example, with Musk's rivals. Since then, four members of DOGE have reportedly been granted access to the agency's systems, now that the security officials are out of the way. Meanwhile, last week, Reuters reported hundreds of USAID contractors were put on unpaid leave. Some were being terminated after Trump imposed a sweeping freeze on U.S. foreign aid. On Sunday, Elon Musk posted a series of comments on X attacking USAID. He wrote, quote, USAID was a viper's nest of radical left Marxists who hate America. He also said, quote, USAID is a criminal organization. Time for it to die. And, quote, did you know that USAID, using your tax dollars, funded bioweapon research, including COVID-19, that killed millions of people? Unquote. President Trump weighed in Sunday night.
It's been run by a bunch of radical lunatics, and we're getting them out. USAID, run by radical lunatics, and we're getting them out, and then we'll make a decision.
Doctors Without Borders has warned The dismantling of USAID, the U.S. humanitarian aid system, quote, will cause an unmitigated humanitarian disaster affecting millions of the world's most vulnerable people, unquote. Congressional Democrats also raised alarm over Musk's move to access classified material at USAID. New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wrote on social media, quote, this is a five-alarm fire. The people elected Donald Trump to be president, not Elon Musk. Having an unelected billionaire with his own foreign debts and motives raiding U.S. classified information is a grave threat to national security. This should not be a partisan issue, AOC wrote. USAID was established by President John F. Kennedy in 1961. For more, we go to Jeremy Kanondike, president of Refugees International. He previously worked in several senior positions at USAID. He was most recently USAID's lead official for COVID-19 in the Biden administration. Thanks so much for being with us, Jeremy. Respond to what has taken place as late as just in the last few hours when the workers at the headquarters of USAID were told to stay home, the office closed.
So over the weekend, we have seen a concerted campaign of disinformation about what USAID is, about what USAID does. A total mischaracterization really doesn't cover it. It is outright disinformation. You heard it from Elon Musk in the clips that you played earlier. You know, it bears no relation whatsoever to the reality of what USAID's work has been for 60 plus years. USAID does development and relief programs around the world. It has helped to save 25 million lives from HIV. It has responded to famines and earthquakes. That was the work that I did in part while I was there during the Obama years. It has promoted democracy. You know, what we are seeing instead are, you know, these attacks against it as a sort of corrupt and illegal organization by people who know nothing about it. They are manufacturing these things out of whole cloth. And you know, you have to ask, well, why are they doing this and why are they targeting USAID? Because the stakes here are not just that we lose what USAID has done for American values and interests and has done for the world. What we are losing here is the integrity, really, of the federal government. If they can do this to an independent federal agency that is mandated by Congress, they can really do it anywhere.
So explain the battle that took place this weekend that led the two top security folks at USAID to be put on leave on Saturday night, and also the kind of information that now that they're removed, Elon Musk, what kind of security clearance does he have? What kind of conflict of interest investigation has been done of him? Background checks to get classified access? And is it true that he's getting information about contracts of his rivals?
So I have not seen any reporting that suggests that Elon Musk has a valid security clearance, particularly to access the systems that it seems like they were trying to access, which were tapped into, you know, the highest level national security networks that the U.S. government has. USAID is a national security agency. It's, you know, it conducts foreign policy work. And as such, in its what are called SCIFs, those are the rooms where special compartmentalized information can be stored. It has a couple of SCIFs, as all the national security organizations do. And you know, most staff at USAID rarely go in there and never need to consume that information. When I was working on COVID, I, you know, barely went in that room. But it exists. It's there for some of the programs that need it. And Elon, through that, if he has access to that, if his minions on this, you know, Doge group of 20-somethings have access to that, that is some of the most sensitive national security information that the U.S. government possesses. None of them, as far as I have heard, have a valid clearance for that. And I think what you saw or what reported of the two security staff is that they tried, as they are legally required to do, they tried to block people without a valid clearance from breaching classified information. And for that, they were pushed out of the agency. And reportedly, the Trump-appointed chief of staff who had just arrived also resigned over this. So, I mean, that should be a huge, huge, huge alarm bell. In terms of specific contract information, I'm not sure what I'm not sure what rivals he might be looking for. I don't get the sense he's looking for a competitive edge here or something. I think he is just looking to destroy this agency, because if they can destroy this agency without any consultation with Congress, without any public disclosure of what they're doing, without even an executive order giving them fig leaf from the president to do this, if a private citizen can just go in and destroy a federal agency, then we are in a dire, dire place as a government and as a country.
Africa CDC Director General Dr. Jean Kasaya explained the scale of the aid Africa receives from the U.S. and the possible effects of the pause. He was speaking on CNN last week.
In 2024, we got $8 billion of support from the U.S. to African continent, and 73% went to the health sector. It means today the U.S. is the main partner that we have bilaterally and also multilaterally through a number of organs and organizations. What we see as a trend today in Africa, it's not just the pause from the U.S. government, but it's also the reduction from assistance from other Western countries. And that one is a major threat to not only Africa, but to the world. And as Africa CDC is projecting with this trend to have around 2 to 4 million additional deaths annually. And that one will also increase the likelihood occurrence of pandemics.
The former head of global health at USAID, Dr. Atul Gawande, also posted on social media Saturday, quote, "I oversaw global health programs at USAID. They reached hundreds of millions of people, added 6 extra years to the lifespan of children in partner countries, and were eradicating health threats worldwide. What insanity and cruelty to break that," he said. And then you have one of the last hospitals in central Gaza being closed down this weekend because they lost their USAID funding. This at a time when the U.S. government, Trump, has approved 2,000-pound bombs being sent to Israel. When it comes to helping the folks of Palestine, of the Palestinians in Gaza, their aid is being cut even further, Jeremy Canondyke.
Yes, and I think it's really important to understand that a lot of what USAID does saves lives every single day. I ran the humanitarian team there for several years. We would respond to famines. We would respond to earthquakes, tsunamis. We led the response to the Ebola outbreak in West Africa in 2014. You know, these are life-saving activities. 20 million people are on AIDS drugs in Africa right now and around the world through USAID and U.S. government support. All of that is at risk. So the stakes here really are that global health threats that could threaten the United States go unchecked. We pull back the tools that we have. The stakes are that hundreds of thousands of people could die of starvation in Sudan as we pull back the humanitarian assistance amidst the famine there. The ceasefire in Gaza, which is premised in part on greater access to humanitarian aid, could be put at risk by pulling back humanitarian assistance there. The ability of the U.S. to support human rights and support democracy around the world, which is a really core part as well of what USAID does, and it's why it's targeted by countries like Russia, who are frankly celebrating this openly this weekend. That is really important, and that will be lost as well.
Jeremy Canondyke, I want to thank you so much for being with us. President of Refugees International, formerly held several senior positions at USAID. Most recently, USAID's lead official for COVID-19 in the Biden administration. Next up, Elon Musk is staging a coup at the State Department as he and his so-called Department of Government Efficiency get access to classified details by taking over the Treasury Department. We'll talk with the Democratic strategist who wrote a piece with Elon Musk is staging a coup as its headline. Stay with us.
Black lights in a mirror disco ball. Every night's another reason why I left it all. Tennessee or Santa Monica, you've been too good to me. Won't make my mama proud. It's gonna cause
Pony Club by Chapel Roan and accepting the 2025 Grammy for Best New Artist, this is what Roan said.
I told myself if I ever won a Grammy and I got to stand up here in front of the most powerful people in music, I would demand that labels and the industry profiting millions of dollars off of artists would offer a livable wage and health care, especially to developing artists. Labels, we got you, but do you got us?
That was Chapel Roan accepting the 2025 Grammy for Best New Artist Sunday night. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. The top-ranking career U.S. Treasury Department official, David LeBrick, has been forced out of the agency after he resisted a demand by Elon Musk and his associates at Doge to gain access to the government's vast payment system, which disperses trillions of dollars in federal payments each year. Trump's new Treasury Secretary, the billionaire Scott Bessent, ended up giving Musk access to the system, which includes sensitive information about taxpayers, Social Security recipients, government contractors, including Musk's rivals. Musk is also accused of waging a takeover at the Office of Personnel Management, where career civil servants have been locked out of computer systems. For more, we're joined by two guests. Waleed Shaheed is Democratic strategist. His new piece on Substack is headlined, Elon Musk is staging a coup. Waleed was previously the spokesperson for Justice Democrats and former senior advisor for the campaigns of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Jamal Bowman. We're also joined in Washington, D.C. by Lindsay Owens, executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative, who says there are several reasons Musk wants to control Treasury payments. None of them are good. Okay, Waleed Shaheed, let's begin with you. What do you mean that Elon Musk is staging a coup?
So if this story was taking place somewhere in Central Asia or in Africa, the United States media, the United States State Department, international institutions would likely refer to this as a coup. A billionaire industrialist who donated $300 million to a campaign is installing his personal loyalists in key parts of the federal bureaucracy. This is essentially Viktor Orban's playbook. And we need to know, why does a billionaire industrialist with millions in government contracts, military contracts for his private companies, need the social security numbers of every American, needs to know what every single check that the U.S. government gives out to businesses, to charities, why does this billionaire need to know this information? He was not vetted or approved by the U.S. Senate. He has a history of corruption for using public resources for private gain. He's one of the wealthiest men in the world. And in any other situation, this would be called called state capture, and people around the world would be condemning it. But in the United States, we are not used to this kind of level of creeping authoritarianism, of plutocracy, of oligarchy. So explicit. And we need to, this is a, as Representative Ocasio-Cortez said last night, this is a five-alarm fire. Senate Democrats need to be communicating to the American people. And last night, there was a call by Indivisible Action for people to visit their senators and call for them to grind the Senate to a halt, to call for investigations, and to know, why does Elon Musk need to know this information? Why is he showing up on Saturday to the offices of the federal government demanding the private information of citizens all around the country?
Well, Lindsay Owens, you say none of the reasons are good. Lay those out.
Yeah, absolutely. So for most Americans, this is the first time that they've ever heard of the Treasury payment system. So what is the Treasury payment system? This is effectively the piece of the federal government that cuts the checks, and they cut a lot of checks. This is $6 trillion a year, money that goes to individuals as Social Security payments for seniors, money that goes for organizations like Meals on Wheels to deliver lunches, foreign aid, as well as the funding that the government sets aside for key programs, paying its debts, making sure that we don't breach the debt ceiling and default on our obligations. So this is really unprecedented that Elon Musk has grabbed control of the keys of $6 trillion in payments infrastructure. There are a few reasons this could be happening. The first is, as your viewers know, last week, President Trump tried to end federal spending, just stop federal payments altogether. This was so outrageous and in violation of the Constitution that the courts intervened and said that he couldn't do that. What may be happening here is that Musk may be doing an end run around the courts, going straight to the source so that he can continue to stop those payments that the courts said needed to keep staying online. The second thing that may be happening here is this could just be a good old-fashioned cyber attack. Elon Musk could be interested in the Social Security numbers, the tax ID numbers of tens of millions of Americans. We know that he has partnered with Visa and is considering spinning out a payment system of his own. What we may have here is Elon Musk's attempt to get the private information for his own financial gain. The other thing that is incredibly worrying here is $6 trillion in spending is not just a lot of money. It's a macroeconomically significant amount of money. If Elon Musk starts tinkering with the code, the underlying technology that makes sure these payments go out seamlessly and effectively, he could inadvertently or on purpose bring the macroeconomy to a halt. I mean, this is an incredibly concerning seizure of government infrastructure, but it is also an economically significant moment in the country. So I couldn't agree with Waleed more. I mean, the word coup is the right word to be thinking about here, and Congress must intervene. I mean, if I was a senator, I think the most important thing to do is bring the Secretary of the Treasury to the Senate today to answer questions about what Musk has access to.
So the Treasury Department's Inspector General, who could monitor DOGE's activities, was among the 15 watchdogs who were purged by President Trump. Who's now in charge of or overseeing Musk's team?
Yeah, Musk is in charge. So that's exactly right. Some of the key chokeholds here to make sure that something like this doesn't happen have been moved out of the way, studiously, exactingly moved out of the way. So President Trump fired the Inspector General of the Treasury and the top civil servant of the Treasury Department, the man who was the acting Treasury Secretary between the time that Janet Yellen stepped down and Scott Bessent was confirmed by the Senate, has also been pushed aside. Resigned over the fact that he didn't want to give Musk, a private citizen, a billionaire, the keys to the Treasury payment system. So there is very little stopping Musk from taking this over. Trump and Bessent have really, given him a glide path.
So, Waleed Shaheed, where is the Democratic Party on this? Where are the Democratic senators and Congress members on this? I mean, you have Hakeem Jeffries, who holds an emergency meeting of the Democrats after a judge stops the federal payments from going out to, stops the ban on federal funding.
So the Democratic Party in Washington is largely asleep at the wheel. They are acting as if they're kind of a librarian shushing noise in a crowded room. They're still believing in the normal procedures, normal decorum, that everything here is the normal transition of power. And they still believe that what Elon Musk and Donald Trump are doing is just a libertarian reform of the government, not an oligarchic, plutocratic takeover of a private billionaire who is seeking to know, potentially seeking to know what his competitors might be doing with government contracts. He has private information that Elon Musk has contracts with international governments all across the world. But the Democratic Party is not able to put forward an opposition message right now because they feel like this is normal. And that's why it's so important for concerned citizens all across the country to twist the arm of your Senate Democrat. Go to their office. If you go to indivisible.org today, you can find a way to join your local chapter. And all around the country, whether your senator is a Republican or a Democrat or independent, they need to hear from concerned citizens because the Democratic Party doesn't move on issues of oligarchy, of plutocracy, of taking action, unless their constituents show up in person and demand that they hold hearings, take the bully pulpit in the media, and also grind the Senate to a halt until we know, why does Elon Musk have this information, someone who is not elected?
So the Democratic National Committee on Saturday elected the moderate political insider Ken Martin as chair, despite calls from voters to urgently switch gears and respond to working people's needs following the party's crushing defeat, though it wasn't a major numbers defeat, but it was a defeat in November. What do you think of Ken Martin? Where do you think it's going?
So the DNC is largely at this point a fundraising vehicle for the presidential campaign. I hope that Ken Martin reforms the party to do things like what I'm describing. The Democratic Party should be holding daily press conferences every morning to explain to working class and middle class Americans why it might hurt their pocketbooks for Elon Musk to have this information from the Treasury Department and from the OPM, that Elon Musk has a history of wanting to use public resources for private gain, that Elon Musk is someone who is live tweeting that he wants to cut the federal government's debt every day by billions of dollars. And one of the only ways to do that would be to begin to privatize Social Security. This is what the DNC should be doing. Now, Ken Martin, we had lots of members of the uncommitted movement at the DNC who were being personally bullied by their DNC state parties. And Ken Martin, thankfully, did intervene to make sure that that didn't happen. And so that was my only personal interaction with him. And that was, he went out of his way to make sure that our uncommitted delegation was treated with respect. Other than that, I don't know that much about him. But I'm looking forward to, hopefully, he can put together a working class populist agenda for the party that isn't just a fundraising handoff.
So, Lindsay Owens, DOGE is not a formal government agency, right? Which means that it doesn't fall into any category.
Yeah, look, I think when President Trump announced that Elon Musk was going to be running the Department of Government Efficiency, there was a sort of tempting fantasy that maybe Musk, a tech successful businessman, could come in and restore some efficiency in government, maybe modernize some aspects of government that could use some updating. I mean, I think with this weekend's seizure of the Treasury payment system, we can be crystal clear in putting that fantasy to bed. This is Musk determining who is going to get funding in this country, what programs are going to be funded in this country. And remember, Musk isn't a disinterested party here. As we've talked about, he has many federal contracts himself, billions of dollars this year alone to his companies, SpaceX, Tesla, and X, formerly known as Twitter. But he also is interested in cutting this funding for a very personal reason, which is he is interested in paying for the tax cuts that Congress is teeing up this year. They are estimating $5 trillion in tax cuts, mostly going to the wealthy and corporations. And DOGE is the entity that is supposedly going to find the money, find the savings to pay for those tax cuts. So I think we can sum it up this way. Elon Musk is going to pay for his tax cut with your Social Security. That's really what we're looking at here. That's what DOGE is up to.
And Lindsay Owens, we're going to have to leave it there. And I just want to give Waleed the last word. 10 seconds. What should people do right now?
People should go to indivisible.org and visit their Senate office and demand an investigation of Elon Musk, and that Senate business should come to a halt.
We want to thank Waleed Shaheed, Democratic strategist. We'll link to his piece, Elon Musk is Staging a Coup. And Lindsay Owens, thanks for joining us from Groundwork Collaborative. In your piece, there are several reasons Musk wants to control Treasury payments. None of them are good, she writes. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of CanadaLand, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.